Blog Talk Radio.
Sidekick Publications is the newest place for all your martial arts informational needs. My Karate, Introduction to American Wadaru, Martial Arts Guide to Success, History of Japanese Martial Arts, Taizanru Taiho Jitsu, and the new Martial Directory. With martial art master instructors like Michael DePasquale Jr., Joe Miller, Alan Woodman, and many more. Everything for martial arts enthusiasts, techniques, shiatsu, history, all in one place. Available at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble's, and bookstores near you. Also available on digital downloads for Kindle and ebook readers. Visit our website at www.sidekickpublication.com and order your books today. Remember, Sidekick Publications, all the action you can read.
The Martial Arts History Museum is the first of its kind in the world, and it only exists with your support. Give generously to the museum and always listen to Sidekick Talk Radio.
That's right, Michael Matsuda. Always listen to Sidekick Talk Radio with your host, Shihan Alan Woodman, and co-host, Renchi Timmy Prisk. Every Wednesday at 12 noon, every Sunday at 6 p.m. for 2 hours each show. And to speak to the host, you can dial 347-237-4818. Welcome to the program, Martial Arts Talk Radio. I'm your host, Danny Venna. My co-host, Greg Melita, is on the wire. And today's show, Tuesday, January 15, 2013, I billed it today as Open Mic Night. And the topic is multiple attackers. So let's open it up with that. Say hello, Sensei Melita.
How you doing, guys? How's everybody doing tonight?
So far, so good. I got some response. If you look on the Facebook page, the some of the loyal listeners are eager to hear about our topic tonight. Hopefully, we will get a switchboard that's busy. Right now, it's just you and I on the wire. So let's open it up. Let's talk about multiple attackers. Obviously, we practice one-on-one a lot of times. That is probably more frequent than working with multiple attackers. But tonight's topic, let's focus in on what our experience has taught us when it comes to having to have to fight more than one. Now, let me just preface it by saying that usually on the street, if you face one attacker, obviously you want to get to the point where you can control that attacker to a point where they can't hurt you. But when you face multiple attackers on the street, nine chances out of ten, they're going to swing something at you. They're going to have something in their hands, maybe a beer bottle or something, you know. Facing multiple attackers is the ultimate challenge for any martial artist, only because one mistake, and it could cost you. So let's open it up. Let's see. Over the years, since you've been training, Sensei Melita, give us your thoughts about how you deal with training for multiple attackers, and tell us if you've ever had any encounters on the street when it comes to multiple attackers.
Sure. First off, the training aspect, we'll get that out of the way first, just because, you know, I think there's a big disconnect in the particular training and trying to simulate multiple attackers. In the traditional way of training for multiple attackers, you would see a lot of people, you know, once again, like I said on the show last night, breaking down the movement to where you lose a sense of reality. Now, you know, say there's three people surrounding you. The typical thing that, you know, a typical school would break it down to where, you know, and if one attacker would come in, you exchange, you know, get him out of the way or you know, get rid of that attacker, disable that attacker, and then move on to the next attacker, move on to the next attacker, and so on. But it doesn't work like that. If there's anything that the Gracie family proved, is that you have one person whose sole goal is to stand up and strike, that is to trade punches and kicks with you, and on the other end of the ring, that opponent, his sole purpose is to clinch and take you to the floor. 80-90% of the time, the guy who wants to close the distance and take it to the floor will impose his will. We'll put it that way. So it's a natural thing to clinch, lose your balance, and fall. You know, if any street fights with non-martial art practitioners would tell you is that most fights go to the ground. After one or two haymakers, they're clinching and going to the floor because they don't have the intelligence to stay up and how to avoid that.
I agree.
So, you know, I think that's a big thing to talk about in training with multiple attackers because there's a huge disconnect. People want to break things down way too much. They lose that sense of reality. Now, going back to that, if there's more than one attacker, most likely they're going to be grabbing a hold of you. If you knock out one guy, that's great, but most likely as you're knocking that guy out, his buddies are coming to hold you down. Unless you do what I was taught from you and a lot of people are taught, which is to make a line out of your opponents as best as you can so you can deal with each one individually because they are in a line. Use one to block the others. Now, aside from doing that, two very impressive ways that I've seen to train for multiple attackers is the way Steven Seagal Sensei has his black belt test. You only pass the test, three guys are standing on one end of the room against you standing on the other. He says, Hajime, and they run out full speed to control you and subdue you. And there is no ifs, ands, or buts. They're not one person coming in at a time. There are three of them coming at you. And you don't pass that, they hold you down. If you don't last 30 seconds, you don't pass the test. That's one very realistic way. And you're using Aikido, which in my mind is made for multiple attacks.
I agree.
You know, having said that, it is still very hard to apply that as Steven Seagal Sensei shows. Most of his people, you know, the people that take that test, it's very hard to pass that. And for good reason. Like I said, it's hard to defend somebody, especially three people trying to clinch with you at the same time. So those are my thoughts on that, on the training aspect. You know, the other aspect is the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu mindset. Now, a lot of people would say, how would you use Jiu-Jitsu in multiple tactic situations? They want to go to the floor, and you obviously do not want to go to the floor. Now, just to get it out of the way, you don't have to be on the floor to be a jiu-jitsu practitioner. There's a knee on belly position. You know, if you do a quick takedown and throw and bring him down and incapacitate him with an arm bar with your knee on his stomach, he's on the floor, your foot is on the floor, so you're technically not even on the floor, yet you're doing jiu-jitsu and you're subduing your opponent. So that's just another way if you have to disable an attacker and keep moving because, as you know, they're going to be clinching with you, whether it's one person or two. So you got to know how to defend that grappling situation, you know. It's definitely – it's just a very difficult thing, and it's very controversial, multiple attackers, too. There are some people that say it can't be done. Run out of there. You know what I mean? And there's people that say it's perfectly can be done, and they train for it. But in my opinion, a lot of people lose that sense of reality when they train for it. What do you think?
Sensei Nagel told me this. His job required him to be able to walk into a room and control the room. Some of the people that he was up against were gang members, all armed, ready to fire. So this was his question. This is what he asked. If you walk into a room and there are, let's say, gentlemen either in a sitting position or a standing position, when they recognize that you are not part of them and that they're going to attack you now because you don't belong there, and they know that 9 chances out of 10 you're there to do what you have to do, which is probably arrest them. So now his vision in his mind taught him this. And this is how he applied it to a very, very difficult, life-threatening situation. You make one mistake, someone's either going to stab you or shoot you. Once that doorway was breached by Nagel, now, a lot of times, he would go in first. Reason being, because his mind was going to capture one of them right away, totally incapacitate that person and use that person almost as a shield to get to the other attackers. Now, obviously, the element of surprise does help a little bit, because as he breaches that door, he's not asking questions, he's not talking to nobody, he's going in there to get to the first person. That was his main objective, was get to the first person. Usually tried to pick the biggest one or the closest one to him. Now, his attack obviously was very ferocious. Whether or not he used a specific lock to control that first person and take that first person and put it into the second, maybe the third, as I said, trying to make a straight line, if you will, to try to stop anybody coming, flanking you. So that's a very dangerous situation should they get behind you. So his objective was to try to keep everything in front of him and try to keep everything in a line. So that as the multiple attackers came, tried to use the first person that he incapacitated and use that person to create that straight line towards the second, maybe third attack. Now, if they start to flank, that's when you, since you have the first one in a joint lock, you would then throw that person into the line that person is trying to flank you on, whether it's the right side, the left side, or from the rear. Even Sensei Nagel would confirm that facing multiple attackers is the most difficult thing that any human being could have to encounter, because if they're trying to do you bodily harm, you then have to have this way of being able to control the attack. Now, we do have, I believe this is Sensei Timmy Prisk on the wire. Is that right, Renji?
How you doing, sir?
We're talking about multiple attackers. Welcome to the show.
Thank you
for calling in. And it is open mic night tonight. And what we are trying to discuss in somewhat detail is one of the dangers, obviously, is if you lose your footing process, if something gets your way, if the fight does go to the ground, now we're in a situation where we have people standing around us. My head is vulnerable because they can kick it. Most people like to bum rush, especially if there's more than one. They like to come at you with that weight because that each one of those people weighs something. So the weight also becomes a contributing factor to whether you're going to be successful or not. And that was the reason why he took the first person and used that person as weight. Now, that was another description that he gave us, how to manipulate weight. Now, we all knew Sensei Nagel. He was not, big-boned. He was not a heavy man. His speed and his quickness and his thought process is what kept him alive in these situations, and which, may I add, he faced many his tenure as a police officer as well as a detective. So Cynthia Melita was just explaining both concepts that should you use both a stand-up and a ground-based attack, not meaning that you have to be on the ground. You could still be standing. But using both systems and taking what would be required, let's say, to control that first person, whether it be a philtrum control, whether it be a joint lock, whether it be a succession of strikes, and then applying the lock so that you can control the person and, you know, hopefully be able to use that person to put in the same direction as the next attack. Now, obviously, this happens instantly, and there is no guarantee. But practice, you know, both in the dojo and then outside the dojo, meaning with some of your peers, go outside the dojo and we train outside, such as in areas like a paved parking lot, and then we also go on dirt and we practice in sand as well as water. But this type of attack, let's say you walk into a room, all right, and you're the police officer and you have to arrest these people. Immediately, as soon as you breach that door, they know you don't belong there. Frenchie Prisk, give us your interpretation of what you would do in a scenario. Let's say there's a couple of people sitting and a couple of people standing in the room. As soon as you go through that door, you notice that there are some sitting and there are some standing. How would you handle that?
Very, very tough question, because I don't think I would ever, first off, get myself in a situation where it was maybe four or five on one, unless I was a police officer, somebody that was trying to protect. Now, if you're saying a family-oriented, if somebody was threatening my family and there was more than one, on a different story here. Now there's no rules, so whatever goes, goes. I would, without the shadow of a doubt, attack probably the biggest or the one that seems like a leader, because that person, without that person, the rest, you know, nine times out of ten aren't going to be able to, you know, come together and work as a group or a team, whatever you'd like to say. So I think from my training that I would try to avoid a four-on-one, a five-on-one situation if possible. If it was impossible to avoid, without a doubt, take out the one that seems the biggest or the one in charge. And without a doubt, joint lock, manipulation, and use that person without a doubt as a shield for them trying to strike me. You know, you could manipulate people with a simple wrist lock or an arm lock, and they'll do whatever you say, or that arm's going to shatter. So
Sensei Melita, how about outside of the dojo? Have you ever had an encounter where you've had people around you that wanted to attack you?
Yeah, a couple times, and luckily it did not get serious enough to the point where I was on the floor surrounded by these guys, obviously, but in one scenario, there was three guys, and, you know, it wasn't such a violent thing where, you know, it was in the middle of the street type of thing, and these guys have glass bottles and knives. It wasn't that extreme. It's just there were three guys, you know, and we were in the gym locker room, and it just so happened that, you know, two guys had words, and, you know, one of the guys was my friend, and the other guys were the other guy's friends, you know, so it was me and my buddy and these three guys. And all that happened was the fight broke out with my buddy and the other guy, and I immediately, you know, sensing that the other two guys were hostile and approaching my friend to jump him, I just grabbed the guy nearest to me, deflected him with a shove, and then went right to the other guy to his rear, slipped to his rear, slipped the rear naked choke on, and just went into the corner of the wall. Now, I was not having the choke on as to the point of the path the guy out. It was just a matter of control.
And then once
the guy was shoved into the wall and knocked down, and my buddy had deflected the one guy and got out of there, and I had the other guy. It was basically just, you know, oh, we knew it wasn't going to go any further than this. It wasn't a bloody, you know, spectacle or anything like that. But in that instance, that's what I chose to do. It seemed like the most appropriate thing. And in that situation, I'm glad, because if I would have applied a, you know, an elbow strike to the guy's nose and snap his kneecap, you know, I'd be in pretty bad shape legally, you know, in a legal sense. So I like that aspect of being able to control the situation and nobody gets hurt. And, you know, you're not putting yourself at too much risk. And I think what really stuck in my head was one of my jiu-jitsu instructors' son was a bouncer, and he wasn't a big guy. And all he used to do when a fight broke out was just grab the guy, put him in a real naked choke, and pull him under a table. Because when you pull under a table, nobody's going to jump on you. And by the time people think about jumping on you, the other bouncers show up and everything's taken care of.
Right.
You know, and you're behind the guy, you're safe under the table, you know, be what it as it may. And you might think that's a little risky, but it worked for him. So that's what I chose to do, and it worked. That's just one particular instance that happened, and I'm glad it worked out that way.
Now, you said that in order for you to pass Sagal Sensei's test, you have to face multiple attackers, and because he's in an Aiki stylist, you had mentioned that Aiki is basically designed to help you deal with multiple attackers. Now, in the practice of, you know, multiple attackers, in a dojo environment now, let's take it back to the dojo so that we don't have to deal with legal issues. But in a practice format, when you practice fighting against multiple attackers, what is your goal?
To show control, definitely.
It's all about control. Okay, so that's,
you know,
the consensus of tonight's phone, that basically what you want to try to do as a martial artist is stay safe and try to control
the situation, pretty much, yeah.
Even if you got to put some, you know, force into others, using one of them as a control mechanism, putting a joint lock on them, as Renchi Press said, you put a joint lock on somebody's arm, and they're going to go where you put them. Otherwise, it's snap. Now, Professor Cates at Camp Budo last year in 2012 said this: once you snap the joint, what's next?
Well, yeah, you know, I gotta throw a little comment in. If they're not high on drugs, if they're not so drunk, that they're, you know, impervious to pain, from my history and from some altercations I've gotten into, once a limb is broken, that fight is over for that person, unless they're on drugs and they're feeling like Superman. So, you know, I look at it this way, and I always have. If more than one person wants to hurt me, I'm going to do anything I have to get out of the situation. I don't care what happens to that person. I don't care what if they're lying there bleeding from every hole on their body afterwards. As long as me, my family, or anyone that they tried attacking is safe, I can care less about them.
Yeah,
and the one other point I want to add to this facing multiple attackers is a very valuable lesson from Sensei Nagel. When, in fact, you are faced with the task of having to have to deal with multiple attackers, you must keep your attack very simple.
Yes, without a doubt.
You must not try to do anything fancy. If, in fact, you are very good at certain things that you've practiced over the years, do not stray from them. Do not try to do something Don't try to do any spin moves. Don't try to do anything difficult. Keep your attack very short and concise.
Well, you know, I got to say one thing. What Melita Sensei said was very true. If I'm in a closed space, an alleyway, a hallway, a room, and I have multiple people coming at me, I think one of the first things any martial artist that knows anything should do is get themselves against the wall for two reasons. A, so nobody can get behind you.
Right,
and that's... You don't ever want anyone behind you because you've lost that fight. If there's people surrounding you and any number of them are behind you, that fight's over because you don't have eyes behind your head. I know one of our codes is the eyes must see in all directions, but, you know, reality says that it's kind of impossible. So, you know, that's one of the first things that anybody in a situation like that should do. They should find themselves a corner, a wall, somewhere where they can actually set up a perimeter and you know, start worrying about, start planning out, you know, in your head and react immediately.
Yeah,
did I lose
definitely.
You, Sensei?
Right,
yeah.
No, just as long as I got you both on. Hey, listen, I agree with that. You know, you get faced with multiple attackers that are trying to do you bodily harm. It is a very difficult task to find the balance to not, you know, really, really hurt somebody bad where you're in trouble.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a big aspect. Another thing I like to point out is that the training aspect is big because you don't want to freak out. The moment you freak out, even when you get taken down, your energy's gone. I don't care what techniques you know. Your heart rate's through the roof. You're not going to be able to do the techniques that you think you're going to be able to do because it's the situation, like I said. And one thing that I do like is my jiu-jitsu instructor, mostly, you know, the jiu-jitsu mindset is avoid the fight at all costs. If there's no way out of the fight, you know, you want to hit first, you want to hit fast, hit hard, get out of there. The only way you want to go to the floor is if you're forced there. That being said, their contention is there's no style that can teach you how to 100% be effective against the stopping the clinch at, you know, the whole clinch type of atmosphere. So what they do, a lot of times they know, you know, in drilling and rolling in jiu-jitsu, they would have two against one, three against one. They know you're going to be tapping left and right, but they want to get you to not freak out when there's two or three people on top of you. You know,
yeah,
so they, you know,
most people will start hyperventilating when something like that happens. They just can't.
Yeah, that's
you know.
The key. You know, you got to be able to stay calm and just, you know, be in there and do the best that you can. You know, that's the biggest key with training that. And their biggest thing is there's no style that can effectively teach you doing that. So I definitely like that aspect of training, you know, just being used to that feeling. That's a big thing.
Sure. Once they raise your adrenaline, as that chemical gets spent, you wind up, as you said, you'll spend your gas right away because you know, you just can't control it. So by training and drilling and preparing, not that you can ever be, you know, 100% prepared, I agree, but mindset of when that chemical actually gets released in your body to the degree that you will spend your gas in to it, that's why we train the way we train, to try to give us the best edge we can possibly get when we're in that situation. God willing, we never get put into that situation, but we still have to prepare for it. Now, let me just ask this question. We're about to run out of time, so we'll hopefully they'll upload this onto the archive section. Let me ask this question. If, in fact, you are drilling with, let's say, more than three people, let's say three or more, let's say three to five, when you drill with these fellow martial artists, whether they be from your style, What do you think is the best way for you to make it as real as possible? Let's go with Sensei Melita first.
Be put in that real environment. You know, have at least three guys there, you know, with gear on, definitely some padding, just to simulate that situation and that aliveness, and have those three guys. Their main goal is to control and bring that guy, that one guy, down to the floor and just hold him down. You know, that's the main thing. To get that feeling, that's the best way. And you got to have the people that are attacking the one guy all trying to rush in at the same time. It does not work if three guys surround the one guy and one, it's one-on-one, and you're just basically doing three different one-on-one matches and trying to do that. That does not work. You got to have the three guys bum rush the one guy at the same time and let that attacker, you know, utilize his skills and try to stay on his feet, try to line the attackers up, use the strikes that he has to use, and, you know, get into and avoid the clinch situation as best as he can.
And Reggie Prisk, how about you?
I like that explanation without a doubt. My training with multiple was a little different. We would have the practice guns, the practice knives also involved. People would be fully padded, head to toe, with the we called it the combat gear and stuff like that. It was, you know, all the way from head, body, arms, leg, everything was covered. And there was nothing, you know, no holds barred, do what you had to do, and we really put the pressure on. Some people, we would break out the shields, and we would put the pressure on with the shields, and you'd have to break your way out. Because of a show called Fight Quest, I don't know if you guys remember the show, it was on Discovery Channel for quite a few, about two years. Well, Fight Quest, I'm friends with both of the gentlemen that did that show, and they said one of the hardest things they did was learn Krav Maga in Israel when they were there, because their training is for multiple attackers. 9 times out of 10, that's what they're training for, because they know it's not going to be 1 against 1. It's going to be 50 against 1. It's going to be 25 against 2, you know, and crazy numbers like that. So after meeting them and really watching the episodes they did where they did fight multiple attackers, I had gotten my group together, and we went down to the park, and reality-based outdoors is really good training to do for this. Because you're really going to get a sense of what you have to do to make sure that the attackers don't get behind you. You know, that's the only way to really get a real scenario, is to just do it. So, you know, that's just another aspect that that I like to throw out there. You know, try to get outdoors, bring the gear outdoors, you know, go to a local park, make it where there's space. You could even go to areas of the park where there might be like a tunnel, or, you know, somewhere where you could be trapped in a corner. You know, you got to practice for it. You know, it's the only way to get good at anything is to practice.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, two quick points I want to make. And number one, obviously you're assessing the situation, you know, and you're assessing the height and the level of danger you're in, obviously. If you're in the highest level of danger, you're doing whatever you can, like, to me, you know, Sensei Chris said, you want to, if you're in the highest level of danger, you don't care what happens to that guy. You're going to do what you're going to do. You're going to go to the highest level of being lethal, obviously. But in the situation that calls for it, you might have to, like, the safest thing to do would be to control your opponent the best as you can, and maybe even put a choke on, because that's the safest thing. He's going to wake up unhurt, unharmed. The worst thing you can do is break a limb in a situation where it was uncalled for and you're in a lot of trouble, and or break a guy's nose or something like that. That's you know, you got to be able to assess the situation as a martial artist and see what the right level of, you know, damage you're going to do. Now, that's what I like about jiu-jitsu, because a lot of times you might be a drunk at a family party, and the guy that you're fighting against is your drunk uncle, and you're not going to be employing side kicks and back fists to the nose. You're just going to have to take him down. You know, you're going to have to take him down and control him. So that's one point I want to make about that, and that's why I really like chokes and those types of situations. Another thing is I really like the point of, some Gracie self-defense tapes are really good because they have the multiple attacker situation. Guy comes in, and you would think you'd want to keep the space. But what you do is you line them up. You clinch with the one guy because you're very comfortable in the standing clinch. And in that standing clinch, you know that guy can't strike you. You have 100% control of him, and now you have all your attackers in a line. And if a guy wants to try to attack you, you have your eyes on the guys, even when you're clinched with the one guy. So you can block and move the guy as you want to. So if his buddy's going to try to punch, as soon as he punches or tries to, you unlock that clinch, they collide, you get out of there. So I like that, you know, you got to work those scenarios. You most likely you would not think you would want to get into a clinch, but in a certain situation you would want to, even in multiple tactics.
I had a situation where a student, we were working the multiple attackers, where, as you said, Sensei Melita, they all came at me at the same time. One guy clinched my legs and locked my legs. Another guy grabbed me from the back, grabbed my neck, put his arm around my neck. So now I got two guys on me. Then the third guy came, and just as he came to the pile, let me put it the pile, I started to turn my body in a circle. I started to force my feet, even though the man had my legs clinched and clinched where his hands were clasped. I couldn't break his hold. I started to use the circle and bring all that weight with all my strength and start stepping around in a circle. And little by little, as they were trying to get me to the ground, I was able to maintain balance by continuously, with whatever tool I had. One hand was on one guy, one hand was on another guy, and I was using their weight to help me build momentum to step in a circle. As I did that, I was able to use the weight of the people on me to protect myself. So the end result was I was able to maintain control of all three of them by keeping them on me without letting them get distance so that they could punch me when they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Just one of my experiences.
Well, I'll throw one out there real fast, and then I'd like to make a little announcement, just a little thing that's going on this weekend. But my immediate teacher, who's no longer with us, Chris Churchio, used to have four people, anybody that was at the school, he would choose four, and they would attack him. That was his thing. Nobody had gear on. No, we didn't have nothing on. He didn't have nothing on. And his goal was to, make us incapacitated, and our goal was to get him down. And let me tell you, he did it in a totally different way than any of us are talking. He studied the nerves. He knew, all of that good stuff. It's something he really tried to, learn from top to bottom. And before us four were even able to touch him, he had swore that we were surrounding him, and he would take all four of us out even before we got close to him. And it was crazy because we were literally on the floor just around him, I'd say within 45 seconds. And, I always remember him doing that because I was like, damn, I wish I could do something like that, as a brown belt, black belt at the time, Shodan. And it was just, it was amazing to see because unless you felt it, you didn't even understand what he was doing if you were sitting and watching. But he was very, careful with what he was doing, and he it was something he studied. So that's one way of looking at it. As you get better and as you study and as you practice it, anything is possible as long as it's in your repertoire and as long as you practice. So yeah, just another little instance of what we used to call the bull ring and stuff like that, where you're in the middle and people are just all around you coming at you. If it's okay for a minute, I just want to make an announcement. A good friend of mine, Alan Teo, black belt under Sensei Henzo Gracie, Master Gracie, is opening up a new dojo in Fort Lee, New Jersey on Saturday, January 19th. He's having a grand opening party from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. All are welcome. Special guests include Master Henzo Gracie, Hollis Gracie, some of the Olympic judo team that won the gold medals over in London are going to be there. So, you know, it's going to be a really good part, a really good function. You're going to get to see the brand new Henzo Gracie Fort Lee Dojo. It's beautiful. The pictures are on Facebook. And, yeah, check it out. You could find it under my my events. I've been invited by Master Teo, well, Sensei Teo, and one of his students who's a very good friend. So if anyone listening can make it, it's Henzo Gracie Fort Lee, 2175 Lemoyne Boulevard, Fort Lee, New Jersey, 07024. And that's this Saturday, January 19th, from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m.
Congratulations, us.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Very
thank
nice.
You. So I'm hoping it's going to be, you know, a really good event.
See that? You heard that on Martial Arts Talk Radio. I love it. A brand new dojo opening up.
Yes, and very good people who have invited me since their student, who's a friend of mine, has told them about me and everything like that. So I'm excited for Saturday. I hope it's going to be a good event.
Well, you should be. That's a wonderful event to be invited to, and especially some of the martial artists that you just mentioned. So it's quite an honor to be around those people.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, Master Henzo Gracie, one of the top Gracies in the business, in the world of jiu-jitsu. So, you know, I hope anyone listening that's in the New Jersey, New York, Connecticut area can come. And, you know, Greg, if you're free Saturday, give me a holler, and, you know, we can meet up, and you can come over with me and all that good stuff.
Cool, yeah, we'll be in touch.
Awesome, awesome.
It's
a late night for me. My daughter's actually still awake sitting next to me, so I'm going to actually get going right now. I just wanted to try to call in for as long as I could tonight.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys, and I'll be in touch. I'll talk to both of you tomorrow during the day.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, guys.
You know, we took your link today, Sensei Melita, and we were, you know, just going over it, you know, we just kept playing it over and over and over again, and, you know, you can see it on my Facebook page, and both Danny and I were down here getting ready for the show, talking about, you know, the show tonight, Multiple Attackers, and we were watching the way you were, you know, sort of deceiving the opponent by, you know, pulling on the left side, and then when you actually go to deploy the flying armbar, how you bring that leg up in that circle to get around to the front of the face, to put the leg under the neck, and then clasp your feet, and then finalize the move by getting them to tap out. So we were, as we were playing it, you know, especially the one that has the music to it, great choice of music, by the way, but we were watching the way you were doing it, and in the one that's like 7 minutes long, maybe almost eight minutes long, you know, you're sort of going through the practice of, you know, passing the guard, because we saw you pass the guard, I think, three times. I think you were able to get out of the guard like three times. And then when you finally were standing up, you make this gesture to, with your left hand, to sort of distract the opponent for a split second, so that when you go to pick up the leg and get it up to the shoulder level and then go around the head, put it under the chin, clasp your feet, and then, you know, apply the armbar. We were looking at that timing. We were looking at the stances that you were in through the whole fight, actually, you know, through the whole every step you were taking, we were trying to monitor, you know, like where your balance was and how you were stepping. We noticed that a few times you actually, if you watch it and watch it closely, try to count the amount of times that you step almost into a Chinto stance and then move the leg out to a, like a bridge kind of position where the stance is kind of wide and you're leaning on the opponent. And then when you take the weight off the opponent and you make those steps as you're moving around, whether your hands are on them or not, we were trying our best to count the amount of times that you stepped in and out of, let's say, a Seisan stance, a Seiujin stance, maybe a like a modified Chinto stance, not where you were locking your legs as if you went into Chinto stance, but the leg was going behind your knee. and then as soon as that leg almost acted like a like as if you were putting a compass onto paper, where you put, you know, you put the point down and then you spin the compass in the circle, we were watching how the legs were monitoring the balance. Oh, I just lost you.